Today on Family Talk.
So many of the decisions that impact your religious liberty in everyday life get worked out in the courts. So it's important to keep an eye on our judicial system. Our guests today here on Family Talk are here to help us do just that. I'm Roger Marsh, and here now is Dr. James Dobson to introduce today's program.
You know, the very first right given to us in the Bill of Rights, position number one, is the right to express our religious beliefs free from governmental interference. And as we all know, in recent years, those rights have been trampled on by the courts and by the government. So we have been very, very concerned about that subject, and things are changing now. There's still a long way to go, but I want to introduce to you all somebody that's been here before. I think, Kelly, it was about 6 years ago.
That's probably right.
I think Family Talk had just gotten underway, and you came to be with us. We're talking to Kelly Shackelford, who is the president and CEO of First Liberty Institute. That's the largest legal firm in the nation dedicated exclusively to protecting religious freedom. And under his leadership, First Liberty's legal team has participated in cases before the United States Supreme Court, federal courts of appeals, federal district courts, and various state courts. And they have won more, get this, folks, they've won more than 90% of their cases. So these guys have been on the front lines of our greatest concern and what made this country great. Kelly is highly sought after as a lead counsel, as well as a public speaker. He is a frequent guest on national news and talk shows, including Good Morning America, The Today Show, The O'Reilly Factor, CNN, Fox and Friends, MSNBC, how'd you stand that one, and of course, Hannity. He also has been featured in the National Law Journal, the Associated Press, New York Times. I'm telling you that background to let you know we're talking about a superstar here today. And with us in the studio today is his senior counsel, Jeremy Dyes, D-Y-S. I'm so glad you chose to join us today. You came out to be with Kelly, but nobody's going to get near here with the credentials you have without being asked to participate. So I'm delighted to have the two of you here. I talked in my introduction about religious liberty. Kelly, is that your greatest concern for this country?
It is. I think anybody who's a believer understands why it's important. I mean, if you're going to really change the country and change lives, you've got to reach people with the truth, and that redemption is only possible if you have religious freedom, or else it's going to be squelched.
Tell everybody, put flesh on the bones that what I just talked about of the last 8 or 10 years, they're just being an assault on First Amendment rights.
Well, I've been doing this for over a quarter century, and I've never seen anything like what I've seen in the last number of years. People could go and look at this if they ever wanted to at firstliberty.org. There's a publication that we call Undeniable Attacks on Religious Freedom in the United States. We simply catalog each year all the attacks on religious freedom. In the last 3 years alone, the numbers have doubled. So the attacks are not just increasing. They're increasing at an exponential level.
And they're being orchestrated.
Well, sure. There are people behind this. Some of it is like there are groups that are, you know, really focusing on this. And some of it is just a culture that has began to turn against God. And so there's less respect for the sanctity of the church or of religious groups or of religious freedom or the sanctity of people's conscience, their religious beliefs. So we're seeing a lot more attacks. And it's everything from a little five-year-old girl we represented who was actually stopped from praying over her meal and told, quote, it's not good to pray at school, to senior citizens who were actually told that they were going to take their meals away because they were federally funded and they were praying over their meals, and that would violate separation of church and state.
You're not making that up.
No, these are real cases that are in the book. And so when you say it's increasing, it's not perception. We are cataloging these every year, and the numbers are dramatically increasing, and these are real cases that are occurring all over the country.
Are those threats coming primarily from the courts, Or what did the Obama administration try to do in this regard?
I think a lot of people immediately begin to think of things like the HHS mandate, the Obamacare that was going after the Little Sisters of the Poor and ministries and Christian businesses like Hobby Lobby. And that's something I think people immediately recognize as, oh, yeah, I remember those cases in the religious freedom battle. I think of the Catholic bishops where there are conservative and liberal Catholic bishops, but they unanimously came out and said, whoa, this is an attack on religious freedom. So this is something that crossed all lines. There was a real focus on, hey, we are under attack on religious freedoms in a number of these government situations. There were executive orders issued. I think a lot of people saw this, where these executive orders would create all kinds of problems for people of faith or faith-based groups. But the whole culture, if you look over time, has been moving in a direction where there is more hostility to religious freedom and religious expression. And there's a lot more diligence being required to protect it. An example for us, we had 388 legal matters last year, but that was turning away 75% of the request. We're having a hard time keeping up with the increase of what's going on around the country. And the average person, if the government comes in and says, we're going to take away your religious freedom in this situation, doesn't have the money to go out and hire a legal team. And so it's really important that we be vigilant and that we fight back, or we could all lose our freedoms because we simply didn't respond.
When you were ticking off that list, the Hobby Lobby and the Little Sisters of the Poor and others, we're in that list too,
because
that issue came right through our front door, and the Obama administration issued a mandate against us requiring us to give contraceptives to our employees if they asked, or even if they didn't, that were abortifacients. In other words, give them contraceptives that kill babies. That was unconscionable to us and to me in particular. And I'm telling a story that we've shared before here, but I think everybody needs to know that I wrote a letter to President Obama, and I just said, sir, we will not comply with this order, which we consider to be evil. It involves the killing of babies, and we simply can't do that. Come and get me if you want. That's an actual quote from my letter. And in essence, he did, because the HHS people came with this mandate, and with it is a penalty if we didn't comply. I've forgotten the number, but I think it's over $800,000 a year in fines if we didn't do it, which would close our door. I mean, we couldn't sustain that. And so thanks to the Alliance Defending Freedom that paid the bill, we entered into a lawsuit against the federal government, and we've been there ever since. This is, I guess, 4 or 5 years ago. And now, with Donald Trump in office, it does look like it's going to go away. And to the people out there who are saying Donald Trump is not a Christian, he's not a, you know, a moral man, all those kinds of complaints, all I can tell you is what he's doing has made a difference for us. And I think a lot of other ways, including the likely change in the makeup of the Supreme Court.
You know, I look at all the cases we have and the battles, and again, the good news is, even under the Obama administration, every single year we won over 90% of our cases. Over 90%, because the Constitution protects religious freedom. The law is on our side if we're willing to stand for it. Now we have a different person in the White House who has promised to do a number of very good things for religious freedom. Now, of course, that's got to be executed. That's got to be followed through.
Sure.
And so I know one of the things, the executive order that was leaked, that supposedly the president was considering signing, would take care of the very things you're talking about. The case that Dr. Dobson, that your ministry is under with HHS, also the same thing that the Little Sisters of the Poor, we're representing Chuck Swindoll's ministry, Insight for Living. All these ministries that are being told by the government, you will provide abortifacients or we will destroy you. Those lawsuits could be stopped if this executive order is issued. It would be over.
We need to talk more about that because I want our listeners to really understand what that is all about. Jeremy, I want to hear from you. You've been listening to this. You're concerned about the same thing, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. And the thing that is most interesting to me is that more often than not, people don't go looking for these fights. These fights come to them. And the question that we have—
As Christians.
Well, yeah, exactly. Or any religious believer that has these things. But it seems a lot of these religious believers are Christians these days, right?
Yeah,
that
right.
Little girls go to school and just simply want to pray over their chicken nuggets for lunch, and a teacher tells them, no, you can't do that. Well, she didn't go looking for that fight. The fight was brought to her.
That's a real story.
That's a real story. I was there when the principal then brought her down to the office with their attorney and made her pick out the teacher from a photo lineup. To make sure they knew who it was that actually did the telling her not to do that thing. How about the fifth grade young man who wanted to read his Bible during free reading time at school, and the teacher said, you can't read that book, that religious book, in my classroom. These are real stories that are real people. The point is that none of them went out to look for the fight. The fight came to them. But had they not been willing to stand up for those fights and to say, no, 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 I've got a religious liberty that preexists this government. It has been recognized by this government and is protected by this government, but it preexists this government. I, and along with all the other Americans in this country, we've got this religious liberty. We must stand for that religious liberty. If they don't do that, we all lose our liberty.
But, Jeremy, most people don't have the money to fight, you know, even if they wanted to. They're not lawyers, and they don't even know lawyers that would be willing to help them. And that's where you guys come in.
That's right. Look, we've got the privilege of working with some of the top talent in the country, men and women who are experts in their field. They've worked their entire career to be the experts of litigation. They're well respected amongst the judiciary, the courts that are going to hear these cases. They are excited to partner with us on these cases if we'll provide some of the background training when it comes to religious liberty law, that segment of the area of the law. They jump at the chance to donate their time to these cases as well.
Pro bono.
Pro bono. Yeah. So you've got men and women who are usually charging, you know, $700-$900 an hour to represent major corporations. Are instead going into court with, I remember going into court one time with two churches who they took in $80 a week in their offering plate. And they had seven attorneys going to court with them that during the day were working as attorneys for a major oil company in the country. So this is the kind of
and
talent.
They gave their time. That's what
they donated
pro bono
their time
means.
For free is what that literal translation of pro bono is, for free. And these are the men and women that are really the key to our success and why that 90% number is so high.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible, Dr. Dobson. You see these teams, really they're dream teams. You know, when we filed our first HHS lawsuit, you know, against the Obamacare HHS mandate, our lead counsel was the former head general counsel of HHS. Mm-hmm. When you can go and get the best from the body of Christ that's in the best law firms all over the country that live in that community that have the respect, you can imagine the kind of teams that we get to put together. And it's a ministry to them because they get to use their talents for others in the kingdom. But then it's a ministry to those clients that we have because they get the best attorneys in the country and we win, which then is a ministry to everybody because those precedents protect our kids and our grandkids all over the country.
I'm going to ask you a question that is a little bit delicate because some people think anything that you mention about people who are or were in the political arena is off limits because you can't deal with political matters. I'm going to ask you a question about Hillary Clinton. She's no longer running for office. Therefore, it is legal to talk about the positions that she's taken and why we were concerned about it. But I remember her saying at some point in the last few years that Christians had really better get over it because they're going to have to change their views. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It's not a direct quote, but it's very close.
No, very close. That was on the life issue that she was discussing,
yeah.
That they're going to have to get over, which is fascinating because you look at that and you look at what she said in the debate. I know a lot of people focus on that she would not back off abortion even in the last second before their birth.
That was in the third debate.
That was in the third debate.
And that's what she said.
And Donald Trump was flabbergasted by that, which I think was an incredible difference in where the candidates said they were going to do on the issue. But I think most people realized where that was really going to play out was who they were going to appoint to the U.S. Supreme Court, which is why so many people, I know in evangelicals, it was the number one issue, is the Supreme Court. 81% of evangelicals voted for Donald Trump for president. Why? Because of the Supreme Court. Having that seat open and everybody knowing that the next president was going to appoint, probably, you know, was going to decide who is controlling the court. And we're talking about a very different thing. You know, you brought up this, what Hillary Clinton said about getting over their religious beliefs on the issue of abortion. If she would have been president, I think you would have, everybody knows this, her appointment would have been somebody who would have been very favorable to Roe v. Wade. And we would have had Roe v. Wade, I mean, probably for the next 20 or 30 or 40 years.
Because it could be as many as two or three or four justices if she had been the one making that decision.
And instead, many people think that it's very possible that a President Donald Trump will appoint at least two, and that's all that's necessary, but maybe even more, and that Roe v. Wade could be over. That's why so many people
were focused.
What
that really would
on.
Mean is that the court would not strike down abortion, but
That's
it
right.
would return the issue to the states where it should have been handled in the beginning.
It would be back in the democratic process, and people would be arguing state by state, but it would not be an issue that was taken off the table by the Supreme Court as happened in Roe v. Wade. So it just shows the difference in the candidates, you know, the election that just occurred. And that's just one issue we're talking about, right? Yeah. Religious liberty, where we focus our attention at First Liberty, I don't think people realize this. The argument in Hobby Lobby by our government, this is, I was sitting in court and listened to what the Solicitor General said and read the argument. The argument was that once you go into a for-profit business, you are waiving your religious freedoms and you, quote, now play by the government's rules. That's exactly what was said. Which is frightening, the idea that you give up your religious freedom if you want to feed your family by running a business and making money. Yeah. That was rejected by the Supreme Court. But what people, a lot of people didn't notice is that was rejected 5-4. So a lot of these religious liberties, Hobby Lobby and all these big decisions were 5-4. So religious freedom was really somewhat in a tenuous situation as to whether it was going to dramatically change. And we have a number of cases on their way up to the Supreme Court as we speak that are going to be really big issues. And that's why the court mattered so much.
One more justice will not change that, though, probably, will it?
No. I mean, on the Republican side, replacing Scalia with a conservative is not a change.
Yes.
But there are already a lot of talk about the fact that there's going to be another one within a year. And that will obviously be a change depending upon who is picked.
And it's very, very important that President Trump picked the right person.
Absolutely.
Because it's very easy to make a mistake at that point. If you look back at some of the Republican choices for a position as a justice on the Supreme Court, it didn't work out so well.
No. And I think they're well aware of that and why so many people were focused on this appointment this time. And why groups like us did so much of the vetting of these judges who were on the list, reading all their opinions, making sure that things were known.
What do you think of Gorsuch?
You know, Judge Gorsuch is I really can't think of anyone who has written more solid religious liberty decisions that was now being looked at for the Supreme Court. I mean, he wrote on the Hobby Lobby case. He wrote on the Little – He was a part of those decisions, and when his circuit went the wrong way, he went the right way. He got every one of these things right, whether it's a cross that was up to fallen troopers who had died in the line of duty, where the lawsuit was to take those crosses down. You can't honor people in that way. Or whether it was Little Sisters of the Poor, Hobby Lobby, these cases, he was right every time, and he was excellent in his approach. So really, on the issue of religious freedom, I mean, I don't think you could ever find anybody who had – not only you think he's going to be good, we can read his opinions. He's written almost 3,000 or been a part of almost 3,000 decisions.
What about the life issue?
Well, that issue has not come before him where he's really dealt with it in a direct way. But I think what a lot of people know about him is he went to study under the leading teacher in the world on natural law, the same person who trained Robbie George. If you understand natural law and God's order, something like life and those type of issues, you're pretty steeped in. And then add to that that he wrote a book on euthanasia. And in fact, the editor of his book was Professor Robbie George. So that tells you a little bit about—
Getting better than Robbie. Yeah,
I know. I know you know Robbie, how solid he is. So I think most people look at that and they think, you know, he was pretty clear on euthanasia. He's pretty clear on what background he comes from. And he's very, very strong on his judicial approach, that if it's not in the Constitution, he's not going to create it. And so I think on an issue like Roe v. Wade, it's not in the Constitution. I think he's going to be a Scalia-like justice who's going to say, I'm not here to legislate. I'm here to be a judge.
Jeremy, in the time of the last election, I personally felt like America and its spiritual values, the spiritual heritage, were on the edge of a cliff. A wrong decision right there could have ended constitutional rights to religious liberty and the things that we believe. Were you thinking those same things?
Yes. If it's with Supreme Court judges, or if it's the Circuit Courts of Appeal, or if it's the District Court judges, right or wrong, so many of the decisions that affect everyday life in terms of religious liberty take place through the courts. And we've got laws, we've got legislators that do good things and some do bad things. We've got presidents that make executive orders and veto bad legislation. But where these things really get worked out is in the everyday life of the court systems. And so if the judges are not in the right spots, doing the right things, interpreting the right law, we've got problems.
And I have a problem. I'm loving this conversation, and we're out of time. And so we're going to have to continue it. You all flew out here today from Dallas, where your ministry is located. And you're going to have to go back. So we're just going to continue with this discussion, and we'll let people hear it next time. Is that okay with you?
Sounds great. There's lots to talk about. Yeah.
Then don't move, okay? I can't tell you. I appreciate what you guys are doing. And for your love for the Scripture and love for Christian values, love for the unborn child and for religious liberty. And we're going to continue this discussion next time. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having
us.
And you've been listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, and I do hope you make plans to come back next time for the conclusion of this fascinating conversation with our guests Kelly Shackelford and Jeremy Dyes. They have so much more to share about the importance of the judicial system in the fight to safeguard religious liberty. In the meantime, if you want to find out more about the work of First Liberty Institute and the Religious Freedom Executive Order, go to their website, firstliberty.org. We have a link for their site on the broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org as well. And now we have something special to share with you. Today we are pleased to bring you the winner of our Loving Tribute Contest. Here now is Amanda McNutt to read her winning entry about her husband.
I was out of town last week for work, and my husband, JP, had mommy and daddy duty for a 20-month-old for the whole week. I'm sure they both miss mommy, and I know my husband was looking forward to mommy coming home so his double duty could end. But unfortunately, I came home sick with the flu, and I also had an upper respiratory infection to boot. I then was quarantined to the bedroom for the entire weekend. Thinking of how we show love, it's really not just flowers and boxes of chocolate. I'll tell you what love is. True love is letting me stay in bed. And love is telling me not to worry about doing anything. You just get better, mommy. Love is when he brings me soup in bed. Love is when he takes care of our little girl, Kendall, so I can stay in bed and get better faster. Love is when he changes diapers. Love is when he takes care of our 20-month-old. Love is when he takes an extended lunch to Chick-fil-A so our daughter can play on the slide in order for the house to be quiet so I could get some good rest. Love is when he gives her a bath. Love is when he prepares all meals and even plays nurse to me. Love is hearing my husband in the living room playing with their daughter while I'm laying in bed sick. That's love. Love is hearing their giggles and they make me smile. That's love, real love. Love is a verb. It's spelled G-I-V-E. And love is something you do. My husband loves me by doing. Ephesians 5:25 tells us, "Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. My husband loves me by giving just like Christ did. My husband is showing our daughter how a man is to love a woman by giving to her. That is love. The way my husband loves me by giving means more to me than a box of chocolates." Okay, who am I kidding? I really do love the box of chocolates too.
And thank you, Amanda. Wow, what a touching tribute. Now, if Amanda has inspired you to pick up your pen and do a little writing, head over to our Facebook page to check out a new contest that we're running. Tell us your story about God's loving protection, and you'll be entered to win an iPad Mini 2. But hurry, the contest ends tomorrow. Get the details at facebook.com/Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again right here next time on Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.